Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
You know, this is profoundly authoritarian. It smacks of one branch rule, and it's extremely narcissistic, as one would expect of Donald Trump, and it is very, very dangerous.
I'm glad you said that, because I didn't want to sound like the hysteric.
No, I can be more hysterical than you.
Good. It's a rare gift. Hello, everyone. Welcome to George Conway Explains It All to Sarah Longwell. He's George Conway. I am not Sarah Longwell. I'm JVL from The Bulwark. George, I guess we are at maybe we still have a democracy next Monday. Maybe not. We will find out over the course of this weekend while we get our Kim Jong-un style parade through the streets of D.C. And in the meantime, we've got like three distinct legal things happening around this. And I have so many questions. And you're a lawyer.
I hope to be able to answer them.
I hope you have some answers. So can we start in Los Angeles, and where we have National Guard, about 4,000 National Guard troops deployed, California National Guard deployed over the objections of the state's governor, Gavin Newsom, in ways which appear to maybe not have been strictly legal. The governor filed suit in the district court out there. Yesterday, Thursday, he got a favorable decision, and then it was immediately appealed to the Ninth Circuit, where the district court's decision was stayed. And it appears to me that the Ninth Circuit wants to hear this like next Tuesday, maybe.
That's right.
And then I assume we'll go straight to the Supreme Court after that. Part of me wonders why we even bother with the Ninth Circuit. I mean, why not just go all the way up? I guess, can you explain to me the Newsom case and what the governor of California is arguing and what the government's position in response is?
Okay, so in order to understand that, you have to understand a little bit about what the National Guard is and what the president's authority over it is. And in a nutshell, I think many people out there, you know, have relatives in the military or in the reserves or in the National Guard, so they will know this. There are two basic reserve components to the United States military. One is the actual reserves for the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, and the Marines. And then there is a second reserve force beyond that. It's actually more complicated than that, but let's just leave this one out. There's an Army and an Air Force National Guard, basically in each state. And those are essentially militias because, you know, in the colonial era, all the colonies and then all the early states after the Declaration of Independence had state militias. And what basically we didn't have much of a standing army until the 21st century. So a lot of military actions were conducted by these state militias, organized by the, you know, brought into federal service by the president or by the Department of War and later the Department of Defense. And in fact, in the early parts of the Civil War, most of the troops that were used by the Union Army were state militias, state reserves, in essence. So in the modern era, what we have is we have these militias, which are called National Guard. They are funded by the federal government, but they they're primarily and ordinarily under the control of each governor of every state. Okay. There are circumstances in which the president of the United States can call them into federal service and make them part of the U.S. actual part of the U.S. military and function as part of the U.S. military. And that can happen in the event of wars, for example. I mean, many, you know, National Guardsmen lost their lives in Iraq and Afghanistan, fighting as part of the U.S. armed forces. And then there are a bunch of statutory provisions governing domestic use of the National Guard and domestic use of the military generally. So let's set the National Guard apart for a moment. There is a statute, a very important statute, called the Posse Comitatus Law. And it's been on the books for centuries. And it basically says that you cannot use federal troops, federal armed forces, to arrest people or to conduct law enforcement activities. And that is a crime, actually. It's punishable by 2 years in jail for anybody. You know, if a local sheriff decides to go to the nearby army base and say, hey, I need these soldiers to come help me arrest these bad people, he can't do that. So, and even the president of the United States can't do it, although he would be, if he did it, he would be immune from prosecution now under the Supreme Court's decision last year.
Oh, how convenient, George. Who could have guessed that was going to come back to bite us in the ass?
That was going to come back, yeah.
Yeah, no one could have possibly foreseen that.
So that's one law. There's also something called the Insurrection Act, which he has not invoked. There's been a lot of discussion about the Insurrection Act, and I don't have the language in front of me, but essentially the president can, notwithstanding the objection of any governor, call the National Guard of each state or any state into federal service to put down an insurrection. But what happened here was that Trump used kind of a parallel provision that doesn't, I don't know that it goes as far. It kind of overlaps in some ways with the Insurrection Act, the act that people have been talking about. They did, you know, remember last year before the election on the Insurrection Act, there were these think tanks that did war game scenarios on what would happen if Trump invoked the Insurrection Act and used federal troops to put down, you know, protests in cities. Well, we're almost there. Instead, he relied on a provision of Title 10 of the United States Code, which governs the National Guard and called the armed forces generally. I don't remember. It was part of an act, the Dick Act of 1903, I think it was. And it's 10 USC 12406 is the statutory number. And what it says, and I have it in front of me, is that whenever one, here's option one, this is kind of like the Alien Enemies Act, where there are certain triggers that have to be met before the president can do something. And here are three triggers for this particular statute. One, the U.S. or any of the Commonwealth or possessions of it is invaded or in danger of invasion by a foreign nation. Okay, that's not applicable here. They didn't try to use that one. The second was, there is a rebellion or danger of a rebellion against the authority of the United States, of the government of the United States, or the president is unable with the regular forces to execute the laws of the United States. If either of those conditions is met, the president may call into federal service members and units of the National Guard of any state in such numbers as he considers necessary to repel the invasion, suppress the rebellion, or execute those laws. Orders for those purposes shall be issued through the governors of the states, or in the case of the District of Columbia, through the commanding general of the National Guard of District of Columbia. So here's what happened. If you have a rebellion, or you're about to have one, or if the president needs troops to execute the laws of the United States, because he is unable to, then he's got to go through the governors and call. He can call the National Guard, the state National Guards, into service. So what happened here was we had mostly peaceful protests, but there was some rioting, some hooliganism, some violence. But the LAPD basically shut that down, and they interposed themselves between ICE agents and the public objectors or protesters, and in some cases, bad actors. And basically, they shut that down. And then there were lots of people marching in the streets, but they're entitled to do that. So Trump used this as an excuse to issue an order, invoking those last two exceptions, those last two provisions of 10 U.S.C. 12406 as an excuse to call up the National Guard. And not only did he didn't just do it for California. What's interesting about the presidential order was that it had no geographic scope.
Yes.
It basically said, oh, this is all tantamount to a rebellion, and we need these forces to execute the laws of the United States. And so they issued an order through the Pentagon that said, I'm not sure what the title was. I'd have to look back at the papers again, but it was basically instructions or orders to the adjutant general of the state of California, because the adjutant general in each state is the commanding officer of the state National Guard, through the governor regarding the National Guard. And the problem was, it wasn't really through the governor. One problem. They just basically sent it directly to the adjutant general. And in fact, they didn't consult with the governor, and the governor objected. So that's another problem with what happened. So what happened then next was, fairly quickly, on Monday morning, I think it was Monday morning, the governor, represented by the attorney general of the state of California, sued the United States, saying that it was unlawful. The order was unlawful. And they got a hearing yesterday, really fast service, by the United States District Court of the Northern District of California, for the Northern District of California. And Judge Charles Breyer, who happens to be Stephen Breyer's retired justice's brother, and is a very, very well-regarded federal judge, cranked out a 36-page opinion last night, which basically said that, yes, the state is right. This is illegal. And it basically accepted the opinion virtually accepted all of the state's arguments. Judge Breyer held that there was no rebellion in any sense of the word. A rebellion is an organized, armed effort to basically overthrow the government. And that's not what happened here. I mean, to the extent there was any organization, the judge said, well, yeah, there were some organized protests and peaceful protests, but that's protected by the First Amendment. The people throwing rocks and a couple of Molotov cocktails and doing bad things. There was no evidence presented by the government that those people were organized, let alone that anybody was trying to overthrow the government of the United States. Side note here, consider the irony of Donald Trump asserting that this was tantamount to a rebellion when his peaceful tourists, he felt, on January 6th, who smeared feces on the walls of the Capitol and obstructed the counting of electoral votes required by the Constitution, and did so by invading and assaulting police officers to get into the seat of government of the United States of America on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. That was just a day of love. But let's put that aside.
Some great patriots, George.
Great patriots. So the judge said no rebellion. And not only, the one argument that the government made to counter that was an argument that, well, it's purely in the discretion of the president as to whether something constitutes a rebellion.
Yes,
and right. Court did not buy that. They said what's in the discretion of the president is what to do if there is a rebellion. But the courts have the power to interpret and the plain language of statutes. And there's just nothing here that suggests there was a rebellion. And as for the other trigger that the government relied on, that the president is unable with the regular forces to execute the laws of the United States, he says, well, there's no evidence that he was unable to execute the laws of the United States. ICE arrested a whole bunch of people, and they don't even suggest that there were people that they didn't arrest because of any protests or rioting. So none of these triggers came into play, and so therefore, the president had no authority to put to federalize the National Guard. In addition to that, one additional reason that it was unlawful, according to the judge, and as argued by the state of California, was the order was not actually issued through the governor.
Right.
You can't just put something on a memorandum and say, through the governor, and make it so. It just, you actually have to go through the governor. And that implies, although he didn't reach this point, the judge, it implies that the governor's approval is required. But we don't have that circumstance because he didn't actually go through the governor. And the predicate circumstances of a rebellion or unable to execute the laws of the United States were not met either. So basically, that's the end of it, according to Judge Breyer. 12406 doesn't lawfully apply, and therefore the use of the National Guard by the government, by the federal government, is hereby restrained, said the order, and that the control of those forces has to revert back to the governor of California. And the judge stayed his own order until noon today, Pacific time, I assume it is. But as you mentioned earlier, the Ninth Circuit also issued a stay, an administrative stay, which doesn't reflect any assessment of the merits of the appeal, but simply is designed to allow time for the government and the state of California to brief the issue in the Ninth Circuit. And as you say, it seems that an argument is imminent next week in the Ninth Circuit.
All right. I had some questions for you about this. I want to drill down a little bit. First, we got to hear from our first sponsor, OneSkin. As the weather warms up, you might want to rethink your skincare routine, especially if you're using retinol, which can leave your skin more vulnerable to sun damage. So here's why I'm switching to OneSkin's facial moisturizer, OS1 Face, this summer. In lab studies, OS1 Face boosted collagen production similar to retinol, but without that sun sensitivity risk. And unlike retinol, which can disrupt your skin barrier, OS1 Face strengthens it, helping your skin become even more resilient to the sun, heat, pollution, and other types of environmental stressors. The key is OneSkin's patented OS1 peptide. It works by targeting the signs of aging at the cellular level, something retinol can't do. In fact, it's the first peptide scientifically proven to reverse skin's biological age. So instead of irritating your skin like other topicals can, you're helping your skin look, feel, and act like its younger self. Get stronger, smoother, and healthier skin this summer with OneSkin. I'm spending a lot more time in the sun nowadays, always out and about, always have the sun beating down on my face at baseball games and showcase camps. I do not want the sun to be wreaking havoc on this face. This is the moneymaker right here. OS1 works at the cellular level to improve key aging biomarkers while reducing the visible signs of aging, including lines, wrinkles, and sagging skin. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. For a limited time, you can try OneSkin with 15% off using the code AskGeorge at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with the code AskGeorge. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please show your support for this show. Tell them we sent you. Give your skin the scientifically proven gentle care it deserves with OneSkin. All right, George, I got some questions.
Okay.
The first one is, it seems to me that the government's position in this and its argument is remarkably similar to the arguments it has used basically every time it's gotten dragged into court so far, which is this thing, whatever that thing is, whether it is deporting somebody to El Salvador or telling the judge where a plane is, this is only rightfully the purview of the executive. It is up to us to decide what is or is not in the courts. The court does not have the legitimate standing to render judgment on this. Is that
absolutely
basically right? Because that's right.
That is basically the hallmark of this administration is basically to assert that everything is an emergency. Everything is national security. Everything that's an emergency or national security or otherwise under the authority of the president is under the absolute authority of the president. And no judge, no member of Congress, if you object, you get manhandled. You can talk about that. It can say boo about what the president does, and certainly no federal judge. The federal judges who do that are exceeding their authority, engaging in judicial tyranny, and as Stephen Miller says, they are communists. So this is absolutely the modus operandi of this administration. It's also the classic modus operandi of authoritarians general. We have the power because this is necessity compelled it. And, you know, it's got some U.S. constitutional law distortions and wrinkles in it, like the use of the so-called political question doctrine to say that, well, it's committed to the discretion of the president, so courts can't say whether or not there's a rebellion in the case of 10 U.S.C. 12406 or an invasion in the case of the Alien Enemies Act, and the president should not be told to do anything and cannot be told not to do anything. And so, you know, this is profoundly authoritarian. It smacks of one branch rule. And it is really, and it's extremely narcissistic, as one would expect of Donald Trump. And it is very, very dangerous.
I'm glad you said that because I didn't want to sound like the hysteric. So I guess my first question...
I can be more hysterical than you.
Good. That's a rare gift. It's a rare gift, my friend. So this is their overarching argument. Is that because they don't have better arguments? Or is this like, you know, we're gonna fight on every front we can, and if the court doesn't buy this, then we'll make another argument? Or is this just where they go to because they don't have the law on their side, and they don't really have any of the facts on their side, so they're just trying to, like, because this is it?
Yeah,
you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. This is just, it is, you can look at this on multiple levels. One level is, this is just a legal or illegal extension of the president's and his ilk, their penchant for mendacity, their penchant for lying. I mean, I keep thinking more and more as I'm sitting here in the New York City hotel room of Ed Koch's famous line that he wouldn't believe Donald Trump if Trump's tongue were notarized. Well, this is basically the government. He's lying about the law, lying about the facts, because they have nothing else. But you can look at it also on another level. I mean, this is what authoritarians do. They want absolute power.
Yeah.
They seek absolute power. They seek to be relieved of all constraints, all legal constraints. And at the same time, what they often do is they create the veneer of legality by making arguments of necessity and making arguments that there are emergencies. And that plays into provisions of, you know, that plays distortedly into provisions of the United States Code that talk about emergency powers of the president, for example, tariffs. They're using emergency powers that have never been used to establish tariffs or invoke tariffs to do that. The Alien Enemies Act, where they're using, you know, that's obviously an emergency provision. If there's a war, an invasion, okay, but there's no such invasion here. You're just saying that a bunch of people who get off a plane at Kennedy Airport or Miami Airport or LAX and then move into neighborhoods and do bad things is an invasion in any real sense is ludicrous. But, you know, that they have an Alice in Wonderland view of words. Words mean exactly what I say they mean. And that's, you know, that's Donald Trump. Reality is exactly what I say it is. They've created their own alternate reality. It's founded on lies, but it's also designed to create the veneer of a superficial legality.
Yeah. And I mean, in fairness, it's worked out pretty well for him. So why wouldn't he think it would keep working out, right? Second question here is on the process aspect of it, in which the federal government did not go through the governor. Is that the kind of thing that is easy for them to remedy? Like, is there a superficial way that they can go through? This is another, you know, I expect that this is a front in which they may have stronger ground to stand on, but maybe not. I don't know.
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that that would be one less argument that the state of California would deal with. If they had sent the order to Governor Newsom, even though it was for the adjutant general, and then taken the position that everybody must obey, that would be one less argument that the state of California would have. The state of California would have to make a second argument, which would be that because the statute says that the order must go through the governor, it necessarily means that the governor must approve the order, because the governor is his own person and he doesn't have to transmit the order to his adjutant general, who works for him unless and until the guard is federalized. So that is one argument that was not teed up here, and the judge did not express a view. He expressly reserved the question of whether or not the government could have gone around that problem simply by sending the order basically to Newsom and to the adjutant general simultaneously.
Final question before we move on to the appeals part of this. Is it possible that by the time we get through the appeals process, so we now got to wait to get to the Ninth Circuit, and then that's got to play out. We've got to get a decision. Then that has to be appealed up to the Supreme Court. I mean, do you have a sense as to how long this process is? Are we talking days or weeks?
I think we're talking days. All right. I mean, look at how fast that Judge Breyer issued this order. Everyone understands the exigency of the circumstances. And the governor of the state, and then California, made an argument that, there are only so many of these National Guard troops. I mean, California has the largest National Guard in the nation, but it's only about 18,000 people. So you call up 2,000 or 4,000 of them, that's a lot of manpower. These guardsmen are used by the states for other purposes, and they're used for logistics or in firefighting. And there are some actual fires going on in California right now, as is usually the case. They can be used, to on the border to intercept drugs. They can do that on behalf of a state, okay, not on behalf of a federal government, but they are state militia, so they can be used for that purpose. It's like when you go through, I'm a block away from Grand Central Station right now, and sometimes in the past, in Grand Central Terminal, you see, people in, with heavy arms and with wearing camouflage ever since 9/11. I'm not sure it's a useful thing, but those are state National Guardsmen, okay? And that's under the orders of Kathy Hochul, not President Biden or President Trump. So they have other purposes, and they're needed for other purposes. So that's one exigency here. And also, it's just the fact of the matter is that this is inflaming tensions. And that was a major point in arguing for an injunction that the California State Attorney General made on behalf of the governor, which is that the whole idea here is to diffuse, is to shut the violence down. And they showed to the court that the invocation of this order, this unlawful order, served to actually boost the activity on the streets when it was at a moment when it was dying down. And so which impliedly, and I think this is actually what's happening, is that the president is using an emergency to create an emergency, which is something that, again, authoritarian regimes do.
Yeah, and that was the second part of my question for you is, it seems to me there's a possibility that by the time we get to the Supreme Court, the use of the military might actually succeed in creating the emergency in which they were, under the pretext of which they were called forth in the first place, right? I mean, if something gets really out of hand, if there is a Kent State style situation happens, and then the reaction to that becomes this is unlikely. I think this is not likely to happen, but it's also not impossible, right? You don't have to squint and be like, it is possible in a way that it wasn't possible a week ago. And I don't know. It does seem like they could make the thing that they say that they they already had, you know, make something that looks like a rebellion in quotes or something like that. Make something that is sufficiently large enough and disruptive enough as a backlash that like the ICE troops can't actually enforce the law. I'm putting that in scare quotes. And then like what happens? I guess the other question is, the other way of this is we could taco. There could be a taco trade here where Trump backs down before we get a decision. And just as a, so this is my appeals question for you. What happens if Trump pulls back on the military before we get a decision? Would the court continue to consider this case, or would the case just sort of disappear?
Well, it depends on what you mean by pull back. If he revokes his memorandum, revokes his order, and states clearly that he is returning control of the California National Guardsmen that he called up and reverting control back to the state of California, back to Governor Newsom, then I think there would be an argument that, you know, the dispute is now moot because essentially Trump has given the plaintiffs the relief that they sought from the court. And I think that's right. Probably correct. There's one potential exception to this doctrine of mootness, which is there's something, a doctrine called an exception to mootness called capable of repetition yet evading review. And it's
that is how I would have described this actually, if I had taken five seconds to think about it.
Exactly what the words say they mean. And in fact, in the case of Roe v. Wade, that was the exception that allowed the litigation of Roe v. Wade, notwithstanding that Roe, I guess her name is Norma Jean McCovey in real life, her pregnancy was over by the time the case got to the Supreme Court. So there are times when you have a situation that is likely to recur, if not with the particular parties, with some of the particular parties involved, you could get an exception to moot. I don't think that would happen here. I think we'd have to go through a few more rounds before he got that. But yeah, it's possible he will say, he does this with some frequency. Is he creates a fake crisis, then the crisis goes away for whatever reason, or he just relents and says the crisis was solved because of my great action. And we've already seen him partly do that in the California situation, because he, even before those guardsmen had actually been mobilized, look, within hours after that memorandum in the middle of the night, I think it was, before the guardsmen actually got onto the streets, he said, peace and order in the galaxy have been, peace and order in the galaxy?
Peace and order in the galaxy have been restored, thanks to you, Darth Vader. He declared that the National Guardsmen had done, he had restored peace and prosperity in the country. You know, it's kind of like the tariff thing. This is what he does. Creates a fake emergency and then declares victory over the fake emergency and takes credit for it, even if it had nothing to do with it.
What do you give me?
I mean, we're starting to see this. It feels like we're saying the same things over and over again because he keeps doing the same things over and over again in different contexts. I mean, really, it's
yes. It's like yes. The nightmare like, version of Groundhog Day.
No, and it's funny. It's like I kind of remember saying this stuff for years. I mean, I kind of remember we were kind of saying this is what's going to happen.
Yeah. Tell me about the Supreme Court. What do you think I just look at this and I got to think that Justices Thomas and Alito are really going to have some hard thinking to do. And those guys, who knows where they're going to fall on this question, but I'm kidding. Of course, they're pro king. What do you think the rest of the court is going to make of this, though?
I think the rest of the court is going to handle this much the way it's ended up handling the AEA cases, the Alien Enemies Act cases. I don't think they're going to buy any of this BS. I think they already feel a bit of a mistrust for the government, for the Trump administration. I think that was reflected in their prior opinions in the AEA situation. And, it's sort of a reversal of the normal way that federal courts operate. Normally, federal courts operate as relatively deferential. I mean, that doesn't mean the government always wins, but relatively deferential to the executive branch, because there is what, it's not an official doctrine, but it's sort of a factual description of what courts do. It's called, there's a presumption of regularity. You just assume that the government isn't lying its ass off to you and is acting in good faith. But now I think every federal judge, and you walk, meet one on the street, I mean, they no longer believe that we have a government that acts in good faith. We know that when we have a government that basically lies its ass off at every possible instance. And, you know, notarization, as Ed Koch said, doesn't help.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about another one of those lies in a minute with Kristi Noem saying she had no idea who the gentleman from California was.
He said Padilla. She probably thought he was just some illegal.
Thought he was a waiter. Okay. Our next sponsor is True Classic. We have spent all kinds of time on this show, mostly Sarah and you, talking about the problems with men in this country since the last election. Today's sponsor is here to help men with their fashion choices. True Classic. At True Classic, their mission goes beyond fit and fabric. It's about helping guys show up with confidence and purpose. If you're a man listening to this show, you need the confidence and purpose to fight for democracy. You see what I'm picking up, what I'm putting down. Their gear fits right, it feels amazing, and is priced so guys everywhere can step into confidence without stepping out of their budget. You know what really sets these guys apart? It's not just the fit of the fabric. It's the intention behind everything they do. True Classic was built to make an impact, whether it's helping men show up better in their daily lives, giving back to underserved communities, or letting us riff during these ads without taking ourselves too seriously. You know how much of a plain t-shirt guy I am? I just find a t-shirt I like and I buy like 15 of them and I don't have to buy t-shirts again for 5 years. This is one of the best brands I've got in the rotation. Their shirts are tailored where you want it and relaxed where you need it. There's no bunching, no stiff fabric, no BS, just a clean, effortless fit that actually works for you in real life. George, you're a True Classic guy, aren't you?
I am. I actually have a couple in the drawer here.
Yeah. What are
in
you?
In my bag,
Where are you? Are you on the t-shirt guy?
I have I have a couple. Let me see. Let me see which one I have.
Look at that.
Look.
I love it. For real. Forget the overpriced designer brands. Ditch the disposable fast fashion. That stuff is the worst. True Classic is built for comfort, built to last, and built to give back. You can grab them at Target, Costco, or head to trueclassic.com/askgeorge. And get hooked up today. That's trueclassic.com/askgeorge.
Go straight, get the discount.
All right.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait, and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or Jeff Weiler, ColumbusAutoMall.com.
All right, my man. So yesterday, the Secretary of Homeland Security was off doing her thing, and a United States Senator, Alex Padilla, came in to ask her some questions, and the security had none of it. Everybody's seen the video by now. I guess I just want to put a quarter in the machine and ask you what you thought about that, because I got pretty amped up about it. Sarah and I talked about it on The Secret this morning. Where are you on this thing?
I'm pretty amped up about it, too. I mean, look, even if he's interrupting, even if he was not a United States senator, you don't assault somebody. You just nicely ask them to leave or to wait their turn. You don't go and engage in a full out attack on the guy. But that's what they did. And also they're lying about the fact that they knew who he was. They claim that he didn't know that he was a United States Senator. Well, I mean, he's a United States Senator from the most populous state in the nation. And he said, "I am Senator Padilla," and they're in Los Angeles. So it wasn't that
he's the ranking
hard.
Member on the Immigration Committee subcommittee that Christian Noem has to testify in front of.
And this was a public press conference in a public building. He had every right to be there. And they didn't
also,
say
George, can I make a very pedantic point here?
You can always make a pedantic. Your pedantic points are like other people's.
There are people who just blend into a room and you meet them once and you can never remember them because they're very plain. They're very forgettable looking. Mm-hmm. Alex Padilla is a really large mammal. Like he's a big dude. He's also like kind of a handsome dude. He's got like a, George Clooney kind of thing going on. That is not a forgettable face. In the same way that Christy Noem. When you meet Christy Noem and you see that face, you're not going to forget her. You're not going to be like, have I seen her before? You're going to be like, I know that face. It haunted me in my nightmares.
Right? What about you?
I remember that from Nip Tuck.
Look at him. Look at that. Look, Christy Noem. Look at what he's doing.
Yeah. So it is, the ignorance is not a believable defense. Here. Yeah. I don't know, man. No. And the other thing
it's outrageous. And the funny thing about it is, and I didn't see this detail until I read the New York Times about a couple of hours ago.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for watching the show. If you want to catch the rest of this episode, then go become a Bulwark Plus subscriber. The link to become a subscriber is right below here in the episode description. Click on that. Become a Bulwark Plus subscriber. Catch the rest of the show and support all the great work we do here at The Bulwark. Thanks, guys.
Well, George Conway, he's a man with a plan. Got to sit down with Sarah Longwell, take a stand, explain all the legal problems they're piling high. With Donald Trump, oh my, oh my, oh my. He said, Sarah, let me break it down for you. There's obstruction of justice, corruption too. The legal tangles and troubles, they're growing fast. It's a storm that's gonna last and last. Oh, Conway, tell them well all about it. Those legal problems can't live without it. From the emoluments to the Russian ties. Oh, Sarah, listen close.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.